Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. International Overdose Awareness Day was last week. A tragic death caused by a drug overdose took place in Alderville recently. It was a reminder that no community is immune. First Nations people are 7 times more likely to die of a drug overdose as compared to non-First Nations people, according to a recent study done by the Chiefs of Ontario. It is an organization representing 133 First Nations in the province. On today's show, Alderville Chief Tainar Simpson joins me to talk about the opioid crisis in his community. Similar to places across Ontario, he is facing issues related to opioids, overdoses, and related deaths. Simpson said the Band Council met to discuss the problem at its last meeting. You will learn how it responded to the most recent death and its plans going forward. I'm so pleased to welcome to Consider This Northumberland, Tainar Simpson, Chief of the Alderville First Nations. Welcome back. Good to see you again.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here on such an important issue. I'm looking forward to today's discussion.
What is the current situation in Alderville when it comes to opioids and other harmful drugs?
I think the situation in Alderville is not unlike the situation all across Canada in small communities, small towns, small villages, where the crisis has been getting larger and larger each year. Year upon year, we're seeing greater impacts to our young population, and not just our young people. It's a issue that affects everybody across the board.
Have there been any recent incidents?
Yes, sadly, unfortunately, there have been. Just in the past couple of weeks, we lost a young man to fentanyl, and I won't name any names, but it really affected the community, especially the family. It's just it's such a tragedy to see a young life snuffed out so early with so much potential and possibility, and then to see the family have to cope with that and move on. It's just a tragedy that's been repeating itself even more each year in this community in Alderville.
Do you have any idea of the number of deaths or the number of cases of overdose that you experience in the community?
It's hard to put a number on because we do have a lot of deaths that maybe aren't attributed to this, but opioid crisis played a role in it. But we are looking at least a couple per year, if not more.
The Halliburton Kawartha Pine Ridge District Health Unit circulated 2 warnings this past summer related to a toxic drug supply. What role, if any, does this problem with toxic drugs impact your community?
I think it plays a major role because something like this isn't regulated by any regulatory body in Canada. We know that fentanyl is 100 times more potent than morphine. It's 20 to 40 times more powerful than heroin. So this greatly increases the chances of accidental overdoses. Most of the fentanyl found in Canada was made in other countries, so we have no way of verifying what's in there.
The Chiefs of Ontario, which I know you participate in, said in its most recent report in 2023 on this crisis that opioid-related deaths are more than 7 times higher among First Nations compared to non-First Nations people. What is that number telling you?
Well, it tells me that overall the socioeconomic condition in our communities is worse off than that of the general population. We know that addiction and especially opioid abuse happens more in situations where there are people living in poverty, where there's not a lot of opportunity for the youth and people to get work. There's not a lot of things to keep people, for lack of a better word, entertained. So they will turn to these things that do provide them as some sort of entertainment value or excitement, where this isn't around necessarily in the smaller communities. I think the more remote you get, the more serious the problem gets.
What is the history of opioid and drug use among First Nations?
Well, I think it's getting greater. You had the over-the-counter doctor-prescribed things, medication. So I think that may be where people first get hooked. So if you have people getting injured, they're prescribed this. And then after that prescription runs out, there may still be a source available for it. So then they will start going to that source where, of course, it's not regulated and you have no idea what you're taking. So I know that Indigenous people overall, we have a lower health rate, which means we're probably seeking that medical attention more often and therefore being prescribed these opioids from doctors more often.
How long has this been an issue in Alderville, though?
It's been an issue going on for a while, at least 10 years, I'm going to say, is when we were hearing about it as an issue. And we're like, well, opioids, that, how can that affect us? And then you see things like OxyContin, and you heard about all those drugs that people were taking in the 2000s and the 2010s. And things really changed, I think, when fentanyl became the primary drug that people were using to put in the other drugs. And we know fentanyl is worse when there is a stimulant added. I know when you look at some of the facts, it's pretty bad. So 61% of deaths with opioid crisis also involved taking of a stimulant.
One of the issues identified by the Assembly of First Nations in their studies on this topic is the lack of good data to track what is going on. You mentioned earlier you don't track any of this. Why is that, and what is being done to remedy that?
Well, that's the big thing. I think we know that the problem is out there. So we are trying to look at what can we do as a community. And getting back to the AFN opioid strategy, there's four parts that they've highlighted for community-based treatment. The first is detox. Then we go into treatment. And the third is opioid substitute treatment. So something like methadone. And then the fourth is trauma-informed approach to treatment. So we are looking at building our capacity to help our members, our citizens who fall into this unfortunate cycle. So we don't have the capacity, the infrastructure at this point, and we are looking at investing in that, finding the funds to be able to build a detox center, a transition house, get staff to help with the treatment. We're looking at everything. We know what we need to do. We just we have to make it happen, and we have to be able to find the funds to make that happen.
I understand, though, that this was, in fact, a topic of discussion at your latest band council meeting. What was decided at that meeting then?
The main thing we decided was we need to get more information. We need to address the stigma that goes along with addiction and the opioid crisis. We need to bring the members back into the community. They need to have a safe place where they feel like they don't have to be alone when they do this. They need to be able to know that they can come to us if they realize they've gone in too far and they need help getting out. Addressing that stigma, saying it doesn't matter, like, we are here to help you, I think is the most important thing for them to know.
But those other services that you talked about that you're working towards, how long is it going to take to put those kinds of things in place?
Well, we'd be looking at there's things we can do to get started. We can identify an area, maybe come up with building designs. Perhaps we can identify a house that has rooms that we can use as a transition home. And there's things we can do like that, but without the staff, without the ability and the plan, that isn't enough. We need the whole gamut together, operating as one, to be able to fully address the situation.
Well, I know in that same study, they talked about the increase in naloxone availability. I mean, that doesn't take new buildings. Is there anything being done to even provide that level of support?
Yes, exactly. So that gets into basically information sharing. I think I saw that only 7% of Canadians know how to obtain and administer naloxone, which is way too small considering the seriousness of this issue. I'd like to see that number at least 50%. If you think of it as CPR, if someone happens to go down and they need CPR, generally, like in a population, there's going to be someone that knows how to perform that life-saving activity. But here for the naloxone, people won't know. Even if the naloxone's there, they're not going to be able to know how to administer it. So we need to put that, as well as CPR, Heimlich maneuver, all these life-saving things should be taken as one for everybody.
Another thing that's identified in the strategy is safe consumption sites. Do you think, though, with the Ontario government closing safe consumption sites, this is still a viable approach for your community?
Well, that's the thing. And we get back to the whole idea of the stigma. People are going to say, oh, we don't want to do that. We can't support that. Why would we provide them a safe place? If we provide them a safe place, they're going to do it more. And I don't believe that's true. The thing is, they're going to do it away from people's eyes. They're going to have an OD situation where no one can come to their rescue if necessary. Now, is that right for Alderville? I don't know. This is something that we'd have to bring to council. We know that extreme situations call for extreme solutions. I don't know if this is like the way we would always be, but I think right now we are in a crisis mode and we need to be able to do this to save lives. When I was talking to the mother of the most recent young fellow who passed away, I told her we were going to do something about this, and we have to do something about this, and we can't sit on our butts and wait any longer. Something has to happen.
One of the other things that got identified in this strategy was a culturally appropriate treatment and therapy. Can you explain what is meant by that?
Now, culturally appropriate, when I hear that, I hear elders helping with the youth or whoever it's going to be that needs the help. We find that bringing in the traditions and the culture, the teachings, all help people in different situations. We know that incarcerated people have a much better rehabilitation rate once they learn the culture, once they are engaged with an elder, someone they can talk to, someone they can trust, someone who's been through it before. So these type of supports and teachings do go a long way to help people get over their addictions. And if it's a lifelong thing, then so be it. We'll always be able to provide that support ideally for that individual.
That seems to make a lot of sense, considering that the report also talks about a family-centered approach. Is this family-centered approach used anywhere else in Alderville?
I would say that it is, and it depends upon the family. So if there is some sort of disagreement or, you know, people not seeing eye to eye after a major incident, we encourage things called healing circles or family circles, where everyone gets together, everyone gets to have their say. There's no judgment, and it's known that it's coming together to help whoever the people were who are harmed, be it you know, either a victim or even a perpetrator, someone who needs help to get over the situation. And we try to do it in like without blame, and just knowing that we're here to help those people. So that the circle environment is a major component of Indigenous culture.
You spoke earlier about the root causes of this, and you mentioned it from a medical standpoint of view. One of the things that seems to keep coming back is this idea of the role of intergenerational trauma. Can you explain what is meant by that and how it impacts this particular issue?
When I hear intergenerational trauma, I always think back to residential schools, seeing as that's what I've been working on for most of my life. And the trauma and damages that were caused in the schools for generations. Generations of families were brought up in these residential schools, and now there are no more residential schools, but those problems still exist. You have people that were raised in a certain way that don't know how to raise their children any other way, so they raise the way they were raised. And when someone is abused and they go out and talk about it, and you know, they're trying in their best way to talk about it to their families, that gets introduced. The intergenerational trauma aspect is it goes through everything, and not just like it doesn't stop once the harm is removed.
In another report that I read, the pandemic was one of the factors that was identified as a problem that leads to the use of illegal drugs. It says that a decrease in the access of services during that time, plus the increased isolation, plus the higher levels of stress and anxiety, were contributing to increases in illegal drug use. Does any of this sound familiar in describing what has happened in Alderville?
I would say so, because we all know that the time of COVID was a time of isolation. People maybe weren't able to work. People didn't have their supports. They weren't even able to see their families. So when this situation happens, and you have less opportunities, you have increased stress, and there's also an availability of opioids. We know that that was one of the few businesses that was booming at the time. So I think a lot of people found, for lack of a better word, solace in the fact that they were able to use this to take themselves out of what we were going through. And we all know what we were going through. Everyone had a different way of dealing with it. But we know that it wasn't a normal time. It wasn't a healthy time. We don't look back and say that was a good time. So, and it's in times of trouble that these sorts of crises will flourish.
Some reports also suggest that there's a need for community-based Indigenous policing. And I know that this is something Alderville is pursuing. What role would your own police force play in dealing with this issue?
Well, I think the main thing for Indigenous policing is prevention is one of the main factors of and one of the main goals of Indigenous policing. So they're not going to go in and say, oh, I see that you've got some illicit drugs. We're going to confiscate those and we're going to charge you. The role of an Indigenous officer would be to say, hey, I hear that Frank says that you are maybe in deeper than you should be with opioids. What can we do to help you? And they would reach out. They would offer support and help. And they would be able to come back and report their findings to our health team, to the council, to say, hey, we've got a problem developing here. Let's see what we can do to help this individual. So they would be more of a helper than someone who is bringing down the law and punishing them.
Are there any tools available to the band council to monitor traffickers or people from outside bringing illegal drugs into the community?
I wish that there were. We have rumors and innuendo, which we all know we can't act on. So unless someone says, I know that Billy has a big shipment coming in tonight at, you know, this location, like, we never get that type of information, but if we did, we would act upon it. So without, you know, solid knowledge, evidence, proof, there's not much we can do. We do work with the OPP, but they always run their own investigation, and we know that they can't share too much with us. So we kind of just look to them and see what they find. But as council, as a community, we can't be the investigators going out and taking matters into our own hands.
Well, that's interesting, because in March of 2023, the band council evicted a individual living in Alderville. Has the band council done anything similar to that since then?
No, we haven't. That was an extreme measure, and it's people are still wondering if that was actually the right thing to do. Like, it happened. But again, that set a precedent. If you could go on this type of thing, then you would you'd have to do that to everybody that you suspect. And that's not something that we were going to undertake. But if we know of extreme examples, if we did hear about, say, that, you know, that big shipment coming in and of fentanyl, like we would act on information like that. But for low level, something that's maybe not even such a controlled substance as much anymore. Like it's a very tricky situation because we're talking about members, we're talking about people who have rights. For us, we haven't had a situation that rose to that level in the past year.
The Chiefs of Ontario and the Assembly of First Nations have called for action from the different levels of government to this rise in opioid-related deaths amongst First Nations peoples. Has there been any response from any level of government to your concerns?
Not that I'm aware of. I believe that governments are taking more of this is affecting everybody approach, because the opioid crisis, it doesn't discriminate. It's all socioeconomic classes are fall victim to this. So I think it's good that they're going on the major issues, and I think it's up to the AFN, the Chiefs of Ontario, Anishinaabeg Nation, Alderville, to really pinpoint what's the issue for First Nations. What can we do for our help? So we're given maybe the overarching programs and solutions, and we need to tailor those solutions to our people.
You and I have talked about a lot of different things, and in fact, things that your band council wants to achieve. Can you give a timeline as what can be expected in the upcoming weeks and months to address this?
Well, I think what can we do now? Things like getting the naloxone kits out, getting the information of how to administer naloxone, letting people know that they're not alone if they're in the despairs of addiction, that they can come to us, that we won't arrest them and throw them in jail, that we're here to help them, and if we save just one life with these approaches, then it's all worth it. And we all know that International Overdose Awareness Day was just this past August 31st, just a couple days ago, and we need more things like that. We need an awareness day, we need an awareness week, awareness month, and ideally it's something that, you know, it wouldn't just be one day a year. And this is a new initiative that it looks like they've got a lot of good things going on. They have 6 points that they're really pushing, and the main thing that they're saying is that it's a community-wide effort that can end overdose, and that's what we're taking away from it.
Chief Simpson, I want to thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thank you very much for having me on the show for this very important issue.
That was Alderville First Nations Chief Tainar Simpson. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening, and stay tuned for more from Consider This.